From two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska, this is the Side Vibe, brought to you by Dog Works Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dog Works Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Side Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming, and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood sides on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to the Side Vibe here on Dog Works Radio. You can hear all of our episodes over on dogworksradio.com. You can also find us over on iTunes. Just search for Dog Works Radio, and you can find about 500 episodes of all of our programs, including the Side Vibe. And do us a favor when you're over there and give us a quick review. It helps with our rankings and being able to find us there on iTunes and other social media sites as well. You can also find us on social media. Just search for Dog Works Radio. And the host of the show is Dorothy Wills Raftery. She's calling in from the Hudson Valley area of New York. Dorothy, how are you doing?
Hi, Robert. I'm doing well. We're pre-taping for our Sunday show, and it's a gorgeous day here. We finally have some sunshine, and it's just a beautiful day. And before we get into what our show's about, I just want to give a shout-out because Sunday, the day this is airing, is also my husband's birthday. So happy birthday to my husband, the Five Sides, Hugh Dillon.
Nice.
How are things by you? How's all the beekeeping going?
The bees are doing well. It is absolutely beautiful here today. We're in the high 60s, which is our normal high temperature in the summer, and I'm busy helping my friend build an addition on her house, so keeping busy up here in the very short summer we have in Willow, Alaska.
Well, that's great. Robert, as you know, this episode is about canine epilepsy, and epilepsy awareness is a very important cause for us here at Five Sides, with my Gibson having been an epi dog, a canine epileptic, and he inspired me, of course, to begin the blogging and launch the Live Gibstrong Canine Epilepsy Awareness Campaign. And for folks listening, you can just hashtag Live Gibstrong, and that should pull you up to a lot of different things that we're connected to on social media. And through this campaign, I like to help spread the word that dogs with canine epilepsy can and do live happy, full lives, and to also help educate and support other folks who are, you know, traveling the epilepsy journey with their dog. And I'd like to remind our listeners that my two books on canine epilepsy, Epic Dog Tales, Heartfelt Stories About Amazing Dogs Living and Loving Life with Canine Epilepsy, as well as the illustrated children's Five Sides tale, What's Wrong with Gibson, Learning About Canine Epilepsy, are available through our publishing website, which is at arctichousepublishing.com. And some folks have had some trouble getting in there. It's actually A-R-C-T-I-C, housepublishing.com. I think some folks leave out that first C.
Right.
And then, a portion of the proceeds from the book sold benefit Canine Epilepsy Resources and the Epil Canine Foundation's Emma's Seizures Fund through the North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine's Neurology Department. And both of these books contain valuable information on living with a dog who has epilepsy. And Epic Dog Tales also tells the story of 124 dogs from across the world who are epi dogs, as well as a really good library of informational links and data from my own collection, as well as research and other links that folks have given me through the years. And I just really hope folks who are looking for a great resource book filled with epi dogs and heartfelt stories of their lives will check it out. And I also hopefully we'll have them available in e-books, you know, somewhere in the near future. And speaking of beautiful dogs who star in the Epic Dog Tale books, on today's show we'll be chatting with author Sandra Demirs, who was originally scheduled for the show back in November, and we had to delay that. As many know, I sadly lost my mother, and then Gibson quite suddenly 1 month later. But Gibson did not pass away from epilepsy. For anyone who, you know, follows us on social media, they do know his story. But through love, care, and a combination of holistic treatments and medications, Gibson lived the last 7 years of his life seizure-free. While he did not have side effects, while he did have the side effects from the medications, we faced each one of them, you know, together and overcame each one. And on the show today, Sandra will be talking with us about her book, Corey's Story, the heartfelt and inspirational true story about life with Corey, a purebred Labrador retriever, who too was diagnosed with canine epilepsy, but he was as a puppy. Corey averaged one seizure a month by the time he was 4 years old. And the story takes Corey from puppy through seizures, on medication, and how through research, Sandy discovered the, quote, magic bullet that helped Corey conquer. And, yes, I said conquer. He, too, is a champion. He conquered canine epilepsy. Corey, as I mentioned, is one of the epistars featured in my Epic Dog Tales book. So anyone who has the book or would like to get a book, you can look up Corey's story in there as well. And before we officially meet today's guest on air, I just want to tell our readers a little bit about Sandy. She was born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska, up in your area there, Robert. She's the daughter of an adventuresome airline pilot who also flew many missions on Mount McKinley. She met and married her husband, Jay, while living in Seattle, Washington, where she had completed her bachelor's degree from the University of Washington, double majoring in French literature and anthropology. After living in Paris for a year, she returned to Seattle, where she worked as a receptionist in a law firm, working her way up to the position of senior paralegal. She says she loves to travel to sunny places like Puerto Vallarta, and she also enjoys scuba diving with her husband and son, Jason, and camping with her family in their motorhome, with so many of those trips were taken with Corey, who loved to go camping. The book Corey's Story covers the important and serious topic of canine epilepsy, but Robert's also a great read, and many of the stories of Corey's life that Sandy shares are just really terrific. And I connected with Sandy and learned of Corey's story while putting my book together. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, he's in it. And connecting with Sandy, I received a copy of her book, and quite honestly, I could not put it down until I got turned to the last page. Not only does Sandy welcome you right into her family and life from page one, but you learn right along with her about seizures, the emotional roller coaster ride it can be, you know, having a canine epileptic, which is also known as an epidog, and what research epidog parents will review and learn in order to find the best possible treatments, both traditional and alternative, for their dogs. You'll laugh at her puppy stories. Your heart will swell with love at that human bond between Corey and his family. You can check out my top four paw review. I guess it's four paws review of Corey's story on my blog, and that's at 5sibes.blogspot.com, and it's under November 29, 2014. You'll see that Gibson's featured with the book throughout the blog post, and the book is available online in both hard copy and ebook. There's some instant download formats over on Amazon.com. If you're over on the blog and you can't seem to find that post, you can go up to the search bar at the top left-hand side of the blog site and type in Corey's Story, and that's C-O-R-Y apostrophe S story in the search bar. And without further delay, I'd like to welcome Sandra to the Side Vibe. Hi, Sandra. I'm delighted you're here.
Oh, well, I'm delighted to be here, Dorothy.
Now, Sandra, first let's talk about puppy Corey. How and when did he come into your life?
Well, our son, Jason, was 11 and a half years old, and he'd proven to be a responsible kid. We saw that he didn't need to be in daycare anymore, so this was going to be his first summer without supervision. We decided as a family that the best thing we could do to keep Jason grounded would be to get a puppy, which would be Jason's dog. Jason would be responsible for feeding the dog, walking, training, absolutely everything. Corey was born in May of that year, and we brought him home in late June when he wasn't even yet 6 weeks old. We got a book about how to teach a puppy to have good manners, and Jason read the book, and he applied what he learned by teaching Corey every day. Jason did take on the task of caring for Corey with great success, and by the time school started at the end of September, Corey was ready to be in the house alone while we were at work, and Jason was in school. We enrolled Jason and Corey in obedience training, and they both thrived. They passed all their classes until they'd finished advanced training. Jason taught Corey all the commands, both verbally and with hand signals.
That's wonderful. I know we started our Husky journey with my daughter. She was 17 at the time, and she had wanted a Husky for a very long time, and we had an elderly dog that was a rescue dog that we had since a puppy, and same type of thing. I said, okay, I think you're ready now, and it's amazing watching that bond form, I think, between your child and a dog. It's just
true.
really amazing. Now, how old was Corey when he had his first seizure? And as his story goes, I know you were camping and expecting to have a fun-filled day of swimming and camping, of course, but after you tossed a ball into the lake for Corey to fetch, I know your day drastically changed, and you were miles from help. Can you tell us what happened and kind of take us through that day?
Well, actually, Corey had a few episodes starting from the time he was about 6 months old, which we didn't recognize as being seizures prior to the grand mal seizure, which you just referred to. When I consulted with a vet about the earlier occurrences, I was assured that there was no reason for concern. But that grand mal seizure was one of the worst things I've ever experienced. I didn't know what was happening, and I thought Corey was having a heart attack. He had just turned 3 at the time, and we'd taken him on a family camping outing to a beautiful lake in the southern part of Washington State in the shadow of Mount Adams. On that dreadful morning, I took Corey to the lake and spent a good hour tossing a tennis ball into the lake for Corey to fetch. When we got back to the campsite, my husband, Jay, had prepared breakfast. After breakfast, Jay and Jason wanted to go out on the lake in our Sevalor raft, and I started to go with them. But there was something about Corey that just didn't feel right to me, so I decided to stay at camp and read a book. I could not read the book because my feeling that something's wrong with Corey kept growing stronger. He suddenly stood up on his hind legs, his eyes rolled back in his head, and he fell heavily onto the ground with his body whipping this way and that. In horror, I started screaming for help. And then I got down on the ground with Corey, and I tried to give him CPR while he was rolling around. People from the campground came and stood by, and someone went to call my husband. By the time Jay got to me, Corey was limp, almost lifeless. Jay picked Corey up and put him into our motorhome, and we raced to the nearest town to try to find a vet.
I tell you, I'm sure as for you, even reflecting back on it, I get the goosebumps. I mean, you know, of course, being a fellow parent of an epi dog, you know, a lot of us can so relate to this, especially not knowing what things are the very first time. And it's just very, very chilling because, you know, I'm sure it takes you right back to that day talking about it. And then, of course, you know, I picture my own seizures with the dog, and it is
sure.
A very frightening thing. And, you know, again, for our listeners, that's some of what I really want people to know. You know, networking is so important, hearing people come on and like yourself to tell the story, and hopefully, you know, more and more people who have to, you know, go on this journey with a dog that has seizures will know that they're not alone and that this is a normal type of behavior. I think it's always good to hear, you know, that others are out there as well. When was he actually diagnosed with canine epilepsy?
Well, the nearest town was a good hour's drive from our campground, and the vet there examined Corey, who by then was back to normal, and he said that Corey appeared to be in perfect health. So the only explanation was that he had experienced a seizure. I asked if there was medication for that condition, and I was told yes. So I asked for it right then and there. And the vet said that was not a decision to be made lightly, and most certainly not until and unless Corey had another seizure. So the actual diagnosis of canine epilepsy came from Corey's regular vet after his next seizure.
So what was the suggested treatment, and you know, did you then start him on it?
Well, after a few more seizures, Corey's regular vet recommended that we do start him on phenobarbital. And by this time, I'd gone searching for help online, and I'd found a canine epilepsy group where I learned that anti-epileptic drugs can have adverse effects on the dog, perhaps even damaging vital organs and shortening their lives. And the most frustrating thing was many of the dogs on phenobarbital still experienced seizures and had to have a second drug added called potassium bromide, mm-hmm. which brought with it its own unpleasant effects. I decided not to start Corey on any meds just yet while I continued to try and search for another way to help him.
Yeah, those are the same two medications that Gibson was on. And, you know, I was just thinking, I don't think I set the time frame for our readers. When, what year are we referring to when this started with Corey?
Probably, I think he was born in 97, 98, 99, probably about 2000.
Okay, so, you know, and there's another point, too, is, you know, you're doing all this research, but that's even before we had so much, you know, online. So,
right.
you know, doing that task is, you know, today we can go on and we can pull up, you know, pages and pages of links, but it wasn't that easy back then. There wasn't a real lot to do, so you had to do some homework there.
Yep.
Now, was Corey still having seizures? I mean, he did go on the medication, right? Was he?
No.
Oh, he never did. Okay,
no.
So let's talk about that.
All right. Corey was never on any anti-epileptic medication. Yes, he was continuing to have seizures, and I was searching desperately for answers because I felt I was running out of time. I'd learned on the Canine Epilepsy website that the more seizures a dog has, the lower the threshold becomes for having more seizures, and that while a seizure may initially occur in only one side of the brain, the other side of the brain may begin to mirror that activity, thereby also increasing the frequency of the seizures. The technical words for these conditions are kindling and mirroring, and they are the reason that the more seizures a dog is allowed to have, the more difficult the epilepsy will be to treat.
Now, with a young child, how confusing or scary was it for your son to witness Corey's seizures?
Well, I know that Jason was terrified. Jason was our only child, and Corey was his dog, and they were like brothers. Jason was with Corey during many of his subsequent seizures, and he handled them with admirable calmness and capability, largely because of all the great information I was getting on the Canine Epilepsy website, which I would then pass along to Jason.
So, based on your experiences, what is the best way to talk to a child about a family pet having canine epilepsy?
Well, children are like anyone else. They hate to feel helpless. Feeling helpless and not knowing what to do can make anyone upset. So let your kids know what they should do if your dog has a seizure. For example, let them know that even the friendliest dog might accidentally bite them during a seizure because the dog isn't in control of its jaws. That means if a dog starts to have a seizure, the child needs to take a big step backwards. Mm-hmm. Then he or she should find a trusted adult. This keeps the dog and the child safe from harm, and it enables a grown-up to take over.
Now, I know there are several things that you'd like to point out, so I'm going to go ahead and just let you take us through the various your various experiences and suggestions.
Sure. Okay. Well, you can teach the children to watch for the aura. Dogs seldom have seizures with no warning. Many dogs have an aura for a few minutes or even a few hours before the seizure comes on. That's what I was experiencing with Corey just before his first grand mal seizure, when I said something about him was just not right, so I elected not to go rafting with Jay and Jason. For example, a normally aloof dog may suddenly insist on lots of cuddles or petting, or a typically outgoing dog may try to hide.
Mm-hmm.
Part of learning to deal constructively with your dog's seizures is learning when they are about to happen, and this is true for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You can give the dog space afterwards. Following a seizure, a dog is likely to be a bit shaky. So if your child has a very affectionate relationship with your dog, he or she might be tempted to swamp the dog with affection. So you should teach your child to sit still after a dog has experienced a seizure and wait for the dog to approach on its own. This can be difficult for an impatient and loving child, but be firm. A dog that is still shaky on its feet after a seizure will not necessarily be helped by a lot of physical contact. So if you have children and a dog that has seizures, it's very important for your kids to know what to do if the dog has a seizure in front of them. They should be armed with more knowledge rather than less, so and they can be clear about what needs to be done.
And those are excellent, excellent points, because sometimes a dog, even post-seizure, could, I know with Gibson, he had temporary blindness for a while. So as you said, it's a very confusing time. They may not be able to see, and it's very. These are very important tips, so I thank you for sharing them with us. You know, we do a lot of talking, I think, about what it's like to have a canine epileptic. You know, we know what type of things to look for, what medications, what sites to do, but we don't often talk about the effects it has on the children and the family, so those are very important. Sandy, now, while it's known that the AEDs or the anti-epileptic drugs can adversely affect a dog's liver when on them for a long period of time, I know you said you made the decision to seek alternative forms of treatment. So can we talk about that a little bit?
Well, I've been talking about the help I was getting on that canine epilepsy website, and I made the decision to seek alternate forms of treatment when I saw the web mistress, Marion Mitchell's her name, and when I saw her post her successful experience with her own epileptic dog, Emma.
And the website that you're talking about, just want to let our readers know, is a fantastic website. They have an Epple Canine email list that's very supportive. There's a lot of information, and that's www.canine-epilepsy.com.
Right.
Now, Sandra, you do credit Marion Mitchell of this, and the site's called Canine Epilepsy Resources in your book. So can you tell us about that connection that you made with Marion?
Sure. Marion had an ongoing blog where she described Emma's seizures and her other dog's reaction to Emma in wonderful detail. Emma was both on phenobarbital and potassium bromide, and yet she was still seizing often. And when she would seize, the other dogs would attack her viciously. I'd been part of the group for only a few months when Marion announced that she'd decided to try the raw diet, which was called BARF, which is an acronym for biologically appropriate raw food, or simply bones in raw food. It means giving your dog raw, meaty bones for their meals instead of kibble or canned food. At that time, this was revolutionary thinking, at least here in the United States. Marion consulted with a canine nutritional expert and was told how to feed Emma, a diet that would mirror as closely as possible what a dog would eat in the wild. That would be small prey, such as chickens, rabbits, or even prey that would be eaten by wolves. Marion shared that information with all of us, and in no time, Marion was posting that Emma's seizures were finally coming under control. Over time, Marion was able to adjust Emma's anti-epileptic drugs so that gradually she was able to reduce the drugs, and Emma's lot in life improved tremendously. Not only were her seizures less often, they were less in intensity. By reducing the mind-numbing drugs, Emma regained her personality, and the other dogs in Emma's pack quit picking on her, and they allowed her to be the alpha once again. That was the information that made me consult my own canine nutritional expert in order to get Corey on the same diet.
Canine Epilepsy Resources really is, as I said before, it's such an amazing website. And from, you know, from that Apple Canine support list, so many important links. They have a glossary of terms and so much more. Can you tell us what you found most useful about Canine Epilepsy Resources and why you'd recommend that site to other families of epi dogs?
Yeah, what I found most useful was the sharing of the very frightening experiences in a place where you felt safe with people who'd had years of experience with epilepsy and loads of compassion. I would never have discovered all the helpful things to do for Corey if not for that site. Well, we most certainly never would have thought to try the raw diet.
And just to kind of connect the dots a little bit for our listeners, Emma is also the face of the Emma Seizure Fund, which is what's housed at the North Carolina State University Neurology Department. So a lot of times, our readers and my readers and our listeners here will hear me refer to them and Emma Seizure Fund when we do fundraising of any type, and this is the Emma. Now, for our listeners who are just tuning in, this is the Side Vibe on DogWorks Radio, and we are chatting with Sandra Demers. Demers? Demers.
Demers.
I did it again. Steamers.
That's
okay. Sorry about that. And she's Humanta Corey, who is the subject of her book, Corey's Story, The Real-Life Adventures of Corey, an Epidog, and an inspirational account of how Corey conquered canine epilepsy through diet and nutrition. You can purchase Corey's Story from Amazon.com, and if you want to get more information, you can visit Corey'sStory.com, that's Corey'sStory.com, and there will be much more information over there. And links to these sites are also listed. We'll have them listed here on dogworksradio.com/the-sibe-vibe.com. You discovered just how important nutrition is to dogs living with canine epilepsy. And I thought maybe you can tell us about this and what you learned.
Sure. What I learned is that kibble contains glycotoxins. What might start out as ingredients that were high quality in their original form become toxic for some animals in the resulting kibble once those ingredients have gone through the process of rendering. So what I found out that makes the most sense to me when I look at the possible reasons for a diet to have an effect on canine epilepsy is this. An epileptic dog has what's known as a seizure threshold. If the dog's body needs to spend energy in fighting off something that's not good for it, then it will not have the energy it needs to prevent a seizure. It's like a human patient with a grave illness being exposed to someone with the cold or the flu. The seriously ill person is automatically put in a much more serious health situation than a healthy person would be if he or she were exposed to the cold or the flu.
Mm-hmm.
The person fighting a debilitating illness may actually die by the exposure to a common virus, while the healthy person may have complete immunity or recover quickly if he or she does get the virus. In that same vein, if what a dog eats contains ingredients which are not good for the dog's body, such as the grains, fats, preservatives, and chemicals that are found in commercial dog food, then the seizure threshold is lowered, because the dog needs his energy to get rid of the toxins. That's to say, the food itself is causing stress to the body when the dog doesn't get the nutrition that it needs for optimal performance. Some canine seizures have been linked to low vitamin B1, thiamine, and this is because the chemicals in dog food change the hydrogen ion concentration in the intestines. So the dog's body is not able to absorb the thiamine, even when it's added as a supplement.
Wow. That's a lot of information, and that's really excellent information to know, because I think a lot of people, you know, I know myself included, you know, you hear people say things like, you know, have you tried the raw? Have you tried this, that? And there's just so much more to it.
Yeah.
So I know you and I have talked about getting to an optimal canine diet. Can you talk some about that?
Sure. In order to do that, it's necessary to choose a diet that's as natural to what the dog would eat in the wild as possible. Not all seizure triggers are food-related, but many of them are. In addition to the commercial dog food, Corey's seizure triggers included strenuous swimming for long periods at a time, and occasionally he'd have a seizure right after a full moon. Having multiple seizure triggers is probably the reason why it took Corey's body 5 years to rid itself completely of seizures once we took away the commercial dog food. The more seizure triggers you can identify for your dog, the more you'll be able to help him overcome his body's affinity to suffer seizures.
And just to talk a little bit more about triggers, I know for me sometimes folks will write and ask me different questions about different triggers. And, you know, canine epilepsy is such, for lack of a better term, a beast of its own, because there is no set exact way. Every dog can be affected differently. Triggers can run the gamut from, as you're saying, you know, commercial dog food. I know rosemary extract. There's a lot of dogs that rosemary affects. You talk about the full moon, and I had done a survey, and we did some studies into where lunar phases, as well as solar flares and storms, those type of things can trigger a dog's seizure, as well as environmental things. You know, it could be yard sprays. It could be something as simple as maybe chlorine in a pool. pool or someone's burning a citronella candle. There are just so many different triggers that I think, you know, eliminating things, and we usually do recommend start with the food, you know, to see what could help your dog. And again, you know, you talk to your veterinarian, you know, folks can sit down, have a good conversation. And I always emphasize, I mean, I was very fortunate. I have terrific team of veterinarians, and they were wonderful at Gibson. And, you know, they were very open to alternative measures being used for him as well, as holistic treatments along with his medications. And it's very, very important to have that great relationship with your vet. And if folks don't feel that they have that, then it might be time to look for a different veterinarian or a veterinarian neurologist where you can, you know, sit down and really have a heart-to-heart and find out all the different things that are available for your dog. But triggers can range the gamut.
Yeah.
Sandy, how easy or difficult was it making the switch from traditional to raw food? I know, you know, it seems intimidating, especially, you know, we do use commercial food. Of course, now, you know, they have a lot more choices where there's no grains, and I think that over the years they're really starting to change that. But I hear a lot about the positives of raw, and I'm just curious about making that switch, because I think there might be some people, too, as well as myself, you know, you're hesitant to take that first step. And can you tell us about that?
Honestly, I cried. I mean, I was so upset at the thought of giving my dog raw bones. Raw chicken bones, that, I mean, I was a mess, because I really, really, I love the dog as if he were a human child.
Mm-hmm.
But once I saw Marion's success with Emma and had the blessing of Corey's vet, I did give Corey his first raw chicken bones, and it was just amazing to see how much he loved it.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because it makes, you know, I know it makes me feel normal, because, you know, that I think it is. It's just we're used to a certain way, and doing something different can be very scary.
Right, and those packages of, you know, commercial kibble, they say this is the best, healthiest thing
mm-hmm.
you can do for your dog, and, of course, they show you the greatest-looking dog in the universe,
mm-hmm.
and
with
you're pretty sure
coat.
That if you feed, yeah.
Now, can you tell our readers, what type of meals do you prepare for Corey?
Well, I fed him chicken backs with the organs still attached, chicken necks, game hens, an occasional rabbit or other small prey parts from the grocery store. I bought Corey his own freezer so I could make up large batches and freeze them into meals. I bought green leafy veggies like collard greens, that's full of calcium, by the way, and I'd pulp them up in the blender with other veggies like carrots, zucchini, parsley, and whatever else looked good, and then I'd pour the mixture into freezer containers, ice cube containers, and then I would add about a quarter cup of the thawed veggie mix to the chicken parts with a little bit of organs, such as livers, once a day, and those were Corey's meals. Everything was grain-free, raw, and organic.
So as you're saying this, of course, you know, today we have the green smoothie craze. I have rheumatoid arthritis, and this is part of what, you know, I even do for myself. And again, this predates all of this where, you know, people have green smoothies, recipes, you know, you can find them on Pinterest, you can find them on health websites. But here, Corey was a bit of a groundbreaker, because a lot of this is really you were making green smoothies to mix with the rest of his food, right?
Right. Yes.
Now, how soon after making the switch did you, you know, actually, I before I ask you that, I have to ask you another, because you're dealing with raw food. So we should probably talk a little bit. I know some of our listeners might be saying, okay, what about the handling of raw food? I'm sure that they're...
Oh, good question. So I bought a big box of latex gloves from the drugstore.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, I would always wear those gloves. Well, you know, they're disposable. So you wear them when you're handling the food. And then afterwards, you clean any surface that the food might have sat on your counters with something that would kill germs. So, yeah, raw food can be dangerous if you don't treat it with the respect it deserves.
All right. All right. Now, how soon after making the switch did you notice any difference in Corey, if anything?
Yeah, I started the new raw food diet on May 28th of 2001. It's almost that day again. He had seizures in the following months of June and July, and then he was fine until October. So I was seeing a difference after just 5 months. After that, we went all the way to July of 2002, and by then I was completely convinced that the diet was making a difference.
Wow, that's really quite a difference. Now, was Corey on any other types of supplements or vitamins or anything like that?
Yeah, Corey was also on homeopathy, on and off, and I added fish oil to his morning meal.
And what is homeopathy?
Yeah, homeopathy, it's one of those alternative medicines that a person, Corey's vet was trained both in general regular veterinary medicine as well as all these alternative kinds of treatments. And so she mixed up a homeopathy treatment, which was, it's like a liquid in a little bottle, and we would put that on his tongue. And so I did that on and off as I did these other things, and I'm not really sure if it ever made much of a difference.
You know, I know even today, you know, we try to, it's as you said, there are kids, and I know the same thing with Gibson. You know, it's almost you take it on like you're a co-warrior with them, because I would tell them, we've got this, we're going to get this. And, you know, each thing you're determined so much, and it comes from your heart as well as your head, because you're doing research, but you're also so determined that you're going to help them through this. And of course, at the time, you're going on gut instinct, you're going on learned, you know, information, and you just hope, and sometimes you don't see it till after. I mean, I no longer have Gibson now, and looking back, I'm like, wow, we went 7 years. And I know Corey's not part of your life, Emma, but you look back and say, wow, you know, he beat epilepsy. I mean, you don't know this when you're going through it. So it's a very surreal time as you're trying to, I think, would you say too? It feels surreal. Like,
yeah.
You're trying to do all these different things, and you're hoping they're the right things, and you still have all the time ahead of you to see whether or not it works. But it's pretty amazing. And again, I know I've said this several times, but you were before that cusp of where a lot of this was talked about. So it's amazing, groundbreaking work that you've done with Corey.
Yeah.
Now, oops. I'm sorry. I was thinking of something. And I'm getting ahead of my mouth. Occasionally, that happens to me. I want to ask so many different things, and I just stop because I'm like, oh, wait a minute. My head is like so far down the road. Sandy, you wrote several articles on canine epilepsy as well that are posted over on CoreyStory.com's website. Can we talk for a bit about your article titled "Treatment Options for Canine Epilepsy"? That's always a big concern for folks. And can you go over the four options that you wrote about? The AED, as we said, are anti-epileptic drugs, diet, gold bead implants, and the homeopathic remedies?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about anti-epileptic drugs first.
Okay.
You know, along the way, I spent hours reading everything I could find about other people's experience with canine epilepsy. I wanted to know what drugs were available and what the side effects were and how effective they were. You know, you have to keep in mind that the purpose of treatment for canine epilepsy is to reduce the frequency and intensity of the seizures. And in many cases, the seizures will continue in spite of the treatment. At that time, phenobarbital was usually prescribed by the veterinarians as the first drug of choice to treat seizures. And if that didn't sufficiently reduce the frequency of the seizures, then potassium bromide was usually added. Although I did see instances where potassium bromide was also used alone. For some dogs, these drugs, independently or in combination, were effective enough to reduce the seizures, although I did not often see where the seizures were eliminated entirely, like you had with Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
Another drug, Valium, was often prescribed in order to immediately treat a dog where the seizure lasts for 5 minutes or more, or when the seizures would come in clusters. Valium is usually administered by an owner rectally rather than by injection. During Corey's entire life, once he was diagnosed with epilepsy, I carried several vials of Valium everywhere we went, but never had to use it.
That's wonderful. You know, I know so many different EpiDog parents, and carrying that vial is so important, whether they're planning trips, whichever. And, you know, sadly, many of them need to use it. And to get him to the point where you didn't have to was absolutely amazing. And back when you had mentioned, you know, I was very fortunate that Gibson's treatment plan worked for him. Now, again, I did the phenobarbital and the potassium bromide, and at the time they wanted to put him on phenobarbital, and I had read much about the success of potassium bromide, especially being a secondary, kind of like the second line of defense. So his amount of pheno didn't have to be as high. So I knew going in I wanted to have the potassium bromide right away with his pheno. And as a side, the first part of it is I also had him on different supplements, you know, which – so I think in my mind I believe it was the combination of both that worked, because I was also feeding his body to keep him healthy at the same time. He had phenos very rough on the liver. So potassium bromide is not, but then on potassium bromide you have to watch salt intake, because it is a salt, so it can actually change the way it affects a dog's body. So we went salt-free diet. We actually came out with a line of treats that were named. We didn't come out with them, but they were House Wolf Dog Biscuits, which is in Vermont. I talked to them, and based on Gibson and his diet and the different things we found, they came out with dog treats that were salt-free, grain-free, you know, had no ingredients. They were specifically geared for an epileptic dog. So we tried to keep his diet as well as clean as we could, and then the phenobarbital, of course, you know, and there's information on phenobarbital and using milk thistle as a supplement for dogs on pheno to help cleanse the liver, as well as a liver cleansing diet, which I believe is Dr. Dodd's. And that information as well is over on the Canine Epilepsy site. So I in my mind, I think it was a combination of the medication, yes, but also the fact that, you know, even though we did a commercial diet, I did add things like fresh green beans, organic cream. Everything was organic, but I started adding this diet, the pumpkin, the green beans, you know, organic eggs, and, of course, the supplements. So I kind of do that with myself, too, that if we can get the body healthy, then maybe, well, you know, because the medicines can be twofold. They can help them, but they can hurt them as well. So I kind of think it's a little bit of both, you know, for Gibson. But, you know, I just – and then a sidebar is they also have side effects. When they're on Gibson, as many have followed his story, he wound up having a weak hind end and ataxia issues from his medications.
Yeah.
He also had a bit of bromide toxicity when they did a capsule formulation change, and the compound pharmacy didn't notify anybody, didn't notify the public, didn't notify the vet. I noticed a difference in the capsule, and I mentioned it to them, and they're like, no, it's fine. We use a different capsule. Well, within 24 hours, Gibson was so sick, he became ataxic, right to the point where he couldn't even, his head was falling on the floor.
Mm.
And that was a rush to the vet, who immediately detoxed him. He recognized it as bromide toxicity, detoxed him. His levels were off the charts. And nothing else had changed. Nothing else had changed in his diet, in anything, except that capsule formulation, which they have now come since then. And studies have shown, and there's a case and things going on that people are talking about, you know, this can occur from something as simple as a capsule reformulation. So it was a very scary time. And, of course, out of everything bad comes something good, I think, because then Gibson was able to be at more than half of a reduction of his potassium bromide. So he was able to stay on that lower amount for the rest of his life, which gave him a little bit of his life back, too, because he became less lethargic. He had a lot of vomiting issues from the medication, so that lightened up a bit. So there's so many different aspects to being on the medication, as we said, that the fact that Corey could do this without it is just absolutely amazing. And so now we'll talk about change of diet.
Okay, I was so fortunate to have been made aware of the connection between feeding a raw, natural diet and the reduction of seizures before we got to the point where we needed to start Corey on the anti-epileptic drugs. Although it seems strange to include a dog's diet when you're talking about treatment for canine epilepsy, you know, it was exactly that led us to our success in controlling Corey's seizures. You know, as I've shared Corey's story with others, including some veterinarians, I've been told that Corey must have had an allergy to the commercial dog food that I'd been feeding him. And it wasn't the raw natural diet that helped him, but rather the elimination of the dog food that had been causing him to have these allergies. I can't agree with that because there was not an immediate cessation of the seizures when I began feeding the raw diet to Corey. In fact, it took 5 years for those seizures to stop completely. So if the cause of Corey's seizures had simply been an allergy, then once he stopped eating commercial dog food, I would have expected that his seizures would have also stopped.
Yeah, I would too.
So, I don't know. Another treatment option which I would have considered for Corey, if not for the fact that we got such great results from the diet change, include gold bead implants, which involves the placement of gold beads into acupuncture points, which it has to be done by a highly trained specialist. But I heard so many happy accounts from relieved owners of many dogs with epilepsy who did receive complete relief from seizures once that treatment was performed.
I have to agree with you. I've heard so much good. That was definitely on my list, if Gibson was to wind up starting with seizures again. And, again, a sidebar on this is even when things do work, again, you never know if they'll have a breakthrough seizure. It's just one of those nasty kind of diseases. You just kind of hope as you're going along that they don't and do everything to help them that you can. But Gold Bee was definitely on my list as well. I've heard great things about that.
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't have to go there. I would have if we'd had to. I certainly would have. But I think finding a specialist that can do it would be somewhat challenging.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Now, you also talk about homeopathic remedies.
Yeah. I did. I sought the expertise of a holistic veterinarian who prescribed homeopathic remedies for Corey. And although I used them for years, I also stopped using them from time to time. And I really can't say with any assurance that I saw a difference in the frequency or severity of Corey's seizures. I did see dramatically positive results with the homeopathic remedy Arnicaid, which I would give to Corey when he was a senior and would be experiencing muscle aches and pains. So I can't rule out homeopathy altogether. It's just that I'm not sure that it had any effect on Corey's seizures.
That's understandable, and I've heard good things about Arnicaid as well, for helping with pain, joint pain. But again, as you said, it's another thing that if no one's having success, that they should talk to their vet about possibly doing this, or as you say, find a good homeopathic vet that they can have a discussion with and see what's best for their dog. Now, on your website, your son Jason wrote an article called Foods That Can Cause Seizures in Dogs. Since diet and nutrition played such a large role in Corey's healing, could you review for our listeners the foods that can trigger seizures in dogs?
Sure. I'll name five that come
okay.
to mind quickly. You've got cat food, raw fish, nutmeg, apple seeds, and grapes and raisins.
What is it about these foods that puts them on the no list for epi dogs?
Okay, cat food. For those households which are home to both dogs and cats, as we had, beware of letting the dog get into the cat's food on a regular basis because it's too high in protein and fats for dogs to eat, resulting in potential digestive problems. Cat food is also denser in calories than dogs' diets, so it can lead to obesity in dogs. I used to let Corey lick the kitty's plate, which won't hurt anything if the kitty is eaten well, but just keep in mind that cats and dogs have their own unique nutritional needs, and they should not be allowed to eat the same food.
Excellent point.
So, we're talking about a raw diet for Corey, but not raw fish, especially here in the Pacific Northwest. Salmon and other raw fish can carry a fluke, which in turn carries a bacteria, which can cause seizures and death if consumed raw.
Wow.
By cooking the fish, the danger is completely eliminated, although you must be careful to get all the bones out of the cooked fish before allowing your dog to eat it. I've been told that freezing the fish at a certain temperature will also kill the fluke and eliminate the problem, but I'm not comfortable with taking any kind of a chance when it comes to the health and well-being of my dog, so since I don't know if my freezer can get to the correct temperature or how long the fish would need to be frozen to make it safe.
Wow, that's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot to think about. You know, you hear raw, you don't automatically think no raw fish. Or, you know, I don't because I'm not familiar with it. So that's very, very interesting to hear. And I know you have others, too.
Sure.
So I'm going to let you go on.
Okay. Well, nutmeg is a spice which I've seen in recipes for homemade
mm-hmm.
dog foods and treats, but it's actually a food which dogs shouldn't eat. Nutmeg alone has been known to cause seizures, tremors, and even hallucinations in dogs.
Wow.
So before I knew any better, I used to give – he loved apples, and so I'd give him a whole apple to chomp and munch until I learned that apple seeds and other pits from peaches, cherries, or plums contain the poison cyanide.
Oh, wow.
And cyanide can also cause seizures. It can obstruct the small intestines and cause a painful inflammation for dogs. Although horses can eat their apples whole, core and all, a dog really shouldn't be allowed to eat the apple cores. And then another one is grapes and raisins. And I first learned via the internet that grapes and raisins can cause kidney failure, seizures, and even death in dogs. And about that time, I was reading a training book for dogs that actually advocated giving raisins as treats.
Really?
Yep. And I contacted that author with my concerns, and she was really defensive. And I was concerned enough to follow the internet links about that, and I found it to be confirmed by Snopes as being true.
Wow. Now, I'm just going to let our listeners who are tuning in know this is the SciVibe on DogWorks Radio, and we are chatting with Sandra Demirs, Humanta Corey, who is the subject of her book, Corey's Story, The Real-Life Adventures of Corey and EpiDog, and an inspirational account of how Corey conquered canine epilepsy through diet and nutrition. You can purchase Corey's Story from Amazon.com, and for more information, you can visit Corey'sStory.com, and that's CoreysStory.com. For more information on this inspirational book. And links to these sites are also listed on our show's posting here at dogworksradio.com /the-sci-vibe.com. So now, Sandy, Jason also wrote the article, Five Ways to Deal with Canine Epilepsy, which I'm assuming you both learned about and used with Corey. Can you go over those five methods and tell us how you discovered them and how well each worked for Corey?
Yeah, you bet. The list which we posted on our website is as follows. 1, carry rescue remedy with you at all times. It's an herbal concoction that's supposed to provide immediate calm and relaxation when placed on one's tongue. By the way, this is a human remedy. It's not even made for animals. But we bought 3 or 4 bottles of this stuff, and we always made sure it was available in case Corey had a seizure. I carried some in my purse. We kept some in the kitchen cabinet. We had it in our RV, in the car, wherever we were traveling with Corey. And we did find that if when the dog starts to have a seizure or even in the aura before a seizure, you
mm-hmm.
just apply a few drops inside the mouth, and it did seem to lessen the severity and duration of the seizure.
And
sure
just
did.
In case our listeners are wondering, rescue remedy can be, you can find that in your area health food store, health food section of your regular supermarket or drugstore, and some veterinarians also carry it in their office.
Right. I'll bet you could find it online as well, and it's under
right.
something called Bach, B-A-C-H, Box Flower Remedies. So anyway, rescue remedy is one of the most popular, and it's, boy, people that people have had great success with it in calming, like, their cats down before a vet visit. It's just it works
it's
on animals.
Stuff.
Yeah, it does. Second, turn out the lights and be quiet. It's difficult and often impossible to predict what caused your dog's seizure, but one of the main causes is too much of an outside stimulus, like noise or light. It's brain circuit overload.
Mm-hmm.
So when your dog begins to have a seizure, some people may become frightened, especially if it happens in a public area like an off-leash dog park.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to tell bystanders and onlookers, be quiet, leash their dogs, keep their dogs far away from your seizing dog. You know, dogs have an instinct to eliminate weak members of a pack since they pose a threat to the survival of the pack. So when a dog has a seizure, other dogs, even the nicest ones, may attack the seizing dog by instinct. So if you're outdoors, if you're indoors, turn out the lights, be completely silent, and instruct anyone else around you to be quiet as well. Third is shield your dog from injury. During a seizure, your dog will lose consciousness and his body may convulse uncontrollably. During the convulsions, it's up to you to ensure your dog doesn't injure himself. If you're near the stairs, put yourself between the dog and the stairs. Cradle your dog's head in your arm so he can't smack his head on the floor. Keep your dog on his side and let the saliva flow out of his mouth so he doesn't choke.
Excellent tips. And some people, too, might have, like, knickknacks or things around or on, up on an end table, so it'd probably be good to clear that as well.
Right, right. Another is to apply ocular compression. Did you ever do that with Gibson?
I didn't have to, but I did read up and learn how to do it because, I had heard about it and I heard some success rates with it. So I kept that on in the back of my head so that if anything happens, I would be able to use it. So I'm going to let you talk about that because that is a great thing to know how to do.
Yes, it was another tip I picked up on that canine epilepsy website that you mentioned. And I'll tell you, it was effective for Corey. It's difficult to explain on the radio, so I would invite people to just Google it, ocular compression, and learn how to use it, and it'll tell why it helps.
Right, and I think if they even go over to canine-epilepsy.com, the canine epilepsy resources site, I do believe Marion and the directors there have a bit up there about how to do ocular compression.
Great, good, okay. Well, it did help Corey, it did.
Wonderful.
And number five would be to comfort your dog after the seizure. And that's when the seizure's over, your dog will regain consciousness and be extremely disoriented and frightened. And after a seizure, Corey's tail would go straight between his legs, and he would just need to be held and comforted just like a human would. So be there for your furry friend. Give him love, attention, and compassion. Remember, dogs, they live in a world where they can't communicate with humans about things such as seizures. Your dog has no idea what just happened, and this has got to be really frightening.
Yeah, excellent, excellent, excellent tips. Thank you. You stated, and I quote, "Dogs have a wonderful blessing of living in the present moment and enjoying what it is. They don't fret about what happened a few moments ago, nor do they worry about what might be tomorrow." And such very true words. When did these words ring so true with you?
When I watched Corey return to the lake the very same evening after his grand mal seizure, so full of life and wanting to play and swim as if nothing had ever happened.
They're amazing, aren't they?
Yeah.
I always say that we can learn so much from watching them and how they deal with things like this. They pick up and they just go right back to being a happy dog, and I think there's so much that we can learn from them, from observing them, from caring from them. Now, Sandy,
isn't that what your mom taught you to say? Pick up and move on?
Yes, just keep going.
Keep going.
You saw my post this morning.
I did.
Yes, she did. For the same type of thing, I always asked her, you know, because she also had chronic pain from arthritis and, after my father passed away. And I always said to her, you know, she always greeted everybody every day with a smile. And when my daughter and I walk in, it was as though she hadn't seen us for a year and she might have seen us a day before. And I always said, how do you do it, you know? And she said, just keep going. So, yeah, thank you for tying that in. Sandy, let's talk about when you decided to write the book. You stated that Corey asked you to. Can you explain when you knew you wanted to share his life and your experiences?
Okay, well, Corey was about 8 or 9, and he started having accidents in the house. He had a doggy door, so he could come and go out of the house as he pleased, but he stopped using it sometimes. This was well before a condition that he developed in the last year of his life, and it started to make him feel pain. So when that first started happening, I didn't know what was wrong or what to do. I reached out to a well-known animal communicator in England,
and her answer shocked me. She said, and I quote, "Corey is trying to send you a message. The message is that he's getting close to the end of his life, and he wants you to write a book to share with others about what you did for him to help him get over the seizures. He wants you to call the book Corey's Story. He loves you very much, and he appreciates everything you did for him, and he wants to help other dogs."
Can you have me in tears over here.
Well, I immediately called Jason, and I repeated that message. And Jason's such a level, he's such a level person, and he doesn't take this kind of foo-foo stuff at all. And he just, without a second's hesitation, he said, "Yep, Mom, you need to write the book, and I'll set you up with a website." So Jason set me up with a website, and you know what? Corey's accidents in the house stopped.
Now that gives me chills. That's amazing. I mean,
yeah.
It's just, and I do believe in messages, you know, and I always said that my loved ones would have to do something so obvious because I'm oblivious to those type of things. I am not sensitive to that, and I always say they would have to do something, you know, really step into my world somehow to get my attention. And when Gibson passed, he passed in December. His birthday was 3 weeks later on January 6th, and on his birthday, you know, we had a little celebration with the other four Sibes. And a little where Gibson would normally stand, and I had actually wrote a blog post about this, a rainbow appeared on my floor. I naturally, you know, I grabbed my phone to take pictures, and it was there for a little while. I checked everywhere. There was no possible way. We've never seen a rainbow before in that spot. I've lived here almost 30 years, and it was as clear as day, and the pups all came around, and I said, "Hello, Gibson." I got them to do a little woo, and it disappeared. And it
wow.
has never come back. We haven't seen it again since.
Wow.
I'm convinced he came back. You know, he showed us a sign, whether he came back, whether his spirit's always here. You know, however it works, I do believe that they are with us. And, you know, like I said, he knew he'd have to give me some kind of sign.
Wow.
Dorothy,
oh, my goodness. You know, many of us dog owners, we talk about the rainbow bridge where our
yes.
dogs go.
Mm-hmm.
So it being a rainbow, that's just
right,
incredible.
Exactly. You're right. And so he couldn't have picked a more obvious sign for me to know that was him on his birthday, right in the spot where he
right.
would have been standing with the others. So, you know, I get chills. So when I hear this, I got chills.
Yeah.
Now, you blogged about what Corey was going through. And so why write a book? What was your hope that Corey's message would bring to others that, you know, maybe that you needed to go more in depth other than the blog?
Well, I wanted to give people an idea of who I was so that by the time the book was published, they'd be familiar with me and would trust my experience. That's why I started all the blogging.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted my website to be a place where people could get information as well as to share their own experiences if they wanted to. And many did in that blog. And I told people on my website that I was writing a book where I would bring all of the information together in one place.
Blogging is a terrific thing. It really is. You know, it's just such a wonderful community, and you can get information out that's needed. It's a great place to get feedback. And I often feel that blogging and authors kind of go hand in hand. You know, sometimes you can explain more about your book via the blog. Sometimes you can give more of the history behind things. So I do think it's a wonderful thing. Now, did you already know where you wanted to start his story?
No, not at all.
Now, you share a lot of great moments in his life. Did you know how you wanted to write it, that you wanted to write it the way that it came out?
No, I just started writing chapters in no particular order, and when they were all written, I chose which chapter to put first and in what order to put all the others. Jason wrote all the captions to all the photos in the book, and I thought he did a really clever job.
Oh, he did a fantastic job. He really did. I loved your book. I know I've told you that, and it's really a terrific book. It's just you bring the person right into the world, and you know, it's just really a fantastic book. I hope folks who are listening really go and check it out over at Amazon.com. Now, Sandy, how long did it take to write, and when was it first published?
You know, it took about 9 to 12 months to write, short little thing that it is, and it took another 12 to 16 months to go through the publishing process. The book ends when Corey was 10 years old, and it was published in late September of 2010, and about a week after it was published, he passed away at the age of 13 and a half years old.
Wow, and he was here for it. So his message was not only received, mommy delivered, and then he was free. Amazing.
Yep.
Now, let's talk about that special bond we form with our – I know we all form incredible bonds, a canine-human bond with our dogs. I think it's even a little more intense when you have an epi dog. And, you know, whether the love is first or the care enhances that love, you know, but I've always said that I had this deep, deep bond with Gibson. Now, whether it's because of the treatment time and care goes into it of having an epi dog, but there is such a closeness that happens, I think, while caring for them. And I know you've also said, and I quote, I found that I had actually established an incredibly strong psychic bond with Corey. I could see he understood how much I wanted to help him. I might not be able to say this without tearing up. At the time that I was ready to talk to you, Gibson was still here. So for me, that, now that he's not, it's so true.
Yeah.
Because I've always felt like, you know, we had an animal, communicator come in just to kind of check to make sure when we had brought three puppies at once into our house that Gibson was a little stressed at the time, and this was pre-epilepsy, and so was Harley, because it wasn't just one puppy, it was three, and she walked in and she looked at him and pointed and she said, he's an old soul, and it's so true. There's just something always, I always say it's something special, but you summed it up so well here in your quote. It rings so true. Can you elaborate more for our listeners on that connection you had with Corey, and why do you feel it occurred?
You know, dogs are incredibly sensitive to their humans' feelings, and they know whether or not we care about them. It was very moving to me when I saw in Corey's eyes that he understood how much I wanted to help him.
Now, what type of impact did having a dog with canine epilepsy have on your life?
You know, although I had a full-time job, I was a wife and mother, Corey's well-being was my other top priority. I spent so much time on the Internet connecting with people, articles, information, doing whatever I could in an effort to do my best for Corey. Yeah, it was time-consuming, but it was also my passion.
I understand, and I think so many EpiDog parents are out there nodding their head as well. You know, I don't think we would do anything any different. It is time-consuming. Sometimes it can be costly, but, you know, having that bond and that love and helping a dog, a special needs dog, it's so worth it. It really is. You know, my life has been forever changed by Gibson, and, you know, in his name, the same as you, I'm going on with Live Gibbs Strong to help others know that don't be afraid to adopt that dog if someone says he has seizures. And, you know, if he does have seizures, there's so many resources that we want to make available, such as your site and your book, to others to know that, you know, these dogs can live really terrific lives, and they really bring a lot to our lives. Now, Corey never made it. He passed away a week after the book was published, right?
Right.
Okay. So, you said he journeyed to the Rainbow Bridge in September of 2010, and he, as I said before, these are wonderful dogs, and he proved that epi dogs can and do live happy, full lives, even with canine epilepsy. So his legacy definitely lives on between the pages of Corey's story. So, Sandy, what message do you have for folks who are caring for a dog with canine epilepsy?
I have tremendous compassion for people who are caring for dogs with canine epilepsy. I fully understand that what might work for one dog, it won't work for all of them. My message would just be, please don't give up. Keep learning everything you can, and don't be afraid to take a leap of faith when you have evidence that it just might do some good.
And what message do you think Corey would want readers to take away with them?
Okay, now I'm going to quote from my book. If changing a dog's diet to a species-appropriate one can reduce or even eliminate epileptic seizures, imagine how much healthy dogs could benefit from eating this way. Besides, Corey would add, that chow is way yummy.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Sandy, thank you so much for joining us here today on, you know, and talking about canine epilepsy awareness and just sharing your wonderful Corey story with us. It's just been wonderful having you on.
Dorothy, thank you so much for having invited me. It's been a long time in the coming to make it come together, but
yes,
really it has been an honor to be on your show.
Thank you so much, and you take care, and I hope we talk soon.
Okay.
All right, and to our listeners, have a wonderful day and enjoy your Memorial Day weekend, and I'll be posting some tips about keeping your dog safe during this holiday that's going to kick off summer-like weather for all of us, and we'll be back in June. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.